Well, that was a great trip, wasn't it? That might be, yeah. You know, since all of our other mission trips abroad have kind of been put on the hiatus because of political issues and other reasons, we might have to think about, you know, sending a larger group, getting more adults in, and maybe we fix the rest of the plumbing, right? So really glad for them to be going there, and good job, kids. I'm glad that you guys went. So thank you, adults, for going and helping and getting them there, keeping our kids safe. So I looked up a few things that the odds are very small on. Things like the odds of dying in an airplane crash are 1 in 11 million. Not a high odds of that. The funny thing about that is the odds of being killed by a meteorite impact, 1 in 250,000. Who knew? Like, it's a thing. Little bitty meteorites. I read a story about this lady. She was sitting in her house watching TV, and she got hit in the thigh by a meteorite. Went through a roof. So that's a new fear unlocked for you. You're welcome. Everybody's going to start carrying around lead umbrellas. Being struck by lightning is 1 in 1,222,000. Unfortunately, getting audited by the IRS is only 1 in 220, so that's not good. But you're going to witness something that is incredibly odd. I don't know what the actual numbers are because nobody's actually figured this out, but today you're going to hear a short sermon from me. When does that ever happen? Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, that's good. So knowing that we were going to be doing this today, I worked really hard to try to distill today's story, today's message, today's passage from Acts chapter 12. So you might turn there and keep that ready. I tried to distill this down to, like, what's the most simple part of this story? Because there's a lot in this story to be told. There's a lot of details, and there's a lot of, for me, there's a lot of interesting historical details that you can talk about that kind of add flavor to the story. But I've really got it boiled down to just two things. So we're going to be reading from Acts chapter 12 again as we travel through with our kids through these stories. We're going to be reading from verse 1. We're just going to start right there, chapter 12, verse 1. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. Now, I just want to make one note here on this, because I love the way the ESV writes this, because it's actually more true to the original languages. He laid violent hands on them. Now, that's a different picture in your mind, isn't it? You know, arresting can be kind of civil, you know, but and when you lay violent hands on someone, like, that's a totally different picture. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread. And after arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. And this, I want to mention there also, this idea of earnestly praying for him, That's also a very specific phrase when it talks about that it is, they threw themselves, a very literal translation would be, they threw themselves into the praying. They were actively, aggressively praying. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. "Quick, get up," he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and sandals," and Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but he had no idea what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. They passed the first and second guards and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I know without a doubt that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening it and exclaimed, "Peter is at the door." "You're out of your mind," they told her. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, "It must be his angel." But Peter kept on knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Peter motioned with his hands for them to be quiet, and he described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell James and the other brothers and sisters about this," he said, and then he left for another place. In the morning, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be executed. So as you can see, there's a lot going on in this story. But I want to focus on two small parts, and it's two of the characters. One's a main character, one's a strong sub-character. The first pause that I want us to look at, we see in verse 2. "He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword." This is James, the brother of John. It's one of Jesus' best friends. We know that he had the 72, he had the 12, he had the 3 who were his closest, and then John, at least John's telling of it, John was the favorite. But Peter, James, and John, best friends of Jesus, he's one of the 3. They're besties, they're bros, right? Now, he isn't the first martyr. Stephen was the first one to be recorded to be martyred, but he is a significant one. 13 words, and James is gone. Doesn't really seem like there's much fanfare, does it? I think that this was quite a blow for the Christians, that James was arrested and killed, because earlier, for us, it's 7 chapters earlier in Acts chapter 5, God had miraculously delivered Peter and some of the other apostles, possibly including James. They had been arrested and thrown in jail, but God miraculously delivered them from the jail, and they went out and they continued to preach. There might be some sort of expectation that this is going to be a common thing. If they get arrested, it's okay because God's going to rescue them and deliver them from the clutches of Herod or Rome, whoever has them imprisoned. It seems fair to think that, you know, they may have had a reasonable suspicion that God was going to do that same thing again here, But James isn't sent an angel. He isn't sent an earthquake. There's no rescue squad. All that comes for James is a sword. And I see this, and part of what I see is James's faith. Because he died for his beliefs. He could have recanted. He had an opportunity to save himself. It doesn't say this, but we know that that's the way that things worked. That if he wanted to save his life, he could have denied all of the things that they had been preaching about Jesus. He could have turned away from his beliefs, and he could have contradicted all of the words that Jesus had preached about. He could have saved his life, couldn't he? But he didn't. That would have been contradicting the very words that Jesus preached when in Matthew 16, 25, where he said, whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. Do you have any doubts that James believed those words? Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. Do you believe those words? Not very high odds, when we're talking about odds, that you're ever going to be thrown into jail by Herod. But do you believe these words? Because James did. The second place where I pause in this story and I see a powerful faith, we see in verse 6. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, and we know that it wasn't going to be a real trial. It was going to be a mock trial. And he was going to be executed in front of everybody. That's the reason why Herod is waiting for Passover to be finished, because he realized, man, when I executed James, people liked that. But James was killed probably in the jail. It wasn't a public exhibition. He's going to make a show of Peter because, man, Peter's a catch. He's the primary apostle, right? He's the one that is preaching all of the famous sermons, and he's the one that's talked about all the time when they're healing people. And so he wants to make a big show of this. But the night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. What's Peter doing? Sleeping. Seriously? How? How is he sleeping the night before his execution? Right? How many of us could sleep that night? Could you sleep? Knowing that this is your last time to sleep, that there's nothing that you can do, hoping that maybe somebody would do something? Would you stay up all night praying, pleading with the Lord to do something? I mean, not only that, but he was sleeping really good. Because the word, when it says that the angel struck him on the side, it's not like he was like, wakey, wakey. Hey, Peter, come get up. No, it's like he kicked him in the side, or he had a staff, and he went, boom, wake up. He struck him in the side to get him to wake up. And then, as you read the story, it's like not, he's sleeping so deeply, he's just groggy. How many of you, when you wake up, you're awake? Like, that's me. When I wake up, I'm awake, I'm fully functioning, And the beautiful thing for me is I can go right back to sleep. I am blessed. But some of you are the ones that they make the coffee mugs for that say, you know, coffee isn't for my safety, it's for yours. Right? Yeah, you're zombies until you get up, and you're cranky, and everybody gives you wide berth as you walk around. He has to tell them, hey, get up. Hey, put your shoes on. Hey, tighten your cloak or on. Hey, follow me. Like, he has to, every little step of the way, he has to tell them, like, right foot, left foot. It's just almost comical. Like, how deeply was he sleeping that night? How? I have two ideas about this that I as I was thinking about it. One, it could be because Jesus had already told Peter that he would die a martyr's death. In John chapter 21, verses 18 and 19, it says, very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And we know that it was actually a very specific prophecy, because when it says that they'll stretch out his hands, we know from historical record that Peter was crucified. So it could be that having received this prophecy straight from the mouth of Jesus himself, that he thought, well, this is unavoidable. You know, maybe he assumed that this is my time. I've done all that I can. I've preached. I've been faithful. You know, why struggle? And it could be that the fact that he is so surprised and confused at his deliverance, at his extraction by this angel, that maybe that supports this, that he was being delivered from this. He's like, oh, this is weird. I didn't expect this. My second theory, my second belief, and this is the one that I actually hold to, is that the early believers were so full of Christ that they did not fear death. It's like in Daniel chapter 13, where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're given this last chance to recant their faith, to bow down to the idol, and they respond with this historic claim. It's such great words. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, Michael, I told you wrong. We need 17. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. Our God is able to deliver us, but if not, it's strikingly familiar to Peter's words in Acts chapter 5, where he says, we must obey God rather than human beings. Or we could recall Abraham when he is on the mountain and he's got the knife in his hand and he's going to sacrifice Isaac. And we're told about this in Hebrews chapter 11, that Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. Paul would later on say, to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Peter knows that he doesn't lose if he dies. He just gets closer to Jesus. And so I think that this second explanation fits better. It's not so much that he has resigned himself to his fate. It's an example of his faith. It's evidence of what he believed. That one way or another, God's got him. It wasn't resignation. It was faith. We look at the example of these two men, these two apostles. And I want us to take confidence from their testimony, from their stories. See their example, take confidence from their testimony, follow in their footsteps. I want us to be bold, to be fearless, to be confident that what we have heard about Jesus is true. Because you don't give your life for something that you know is a lie. You might give your life for something if you're deceived, if you legitimately believe that it is true, but you've been deceived by someone else, you might give your life for that. But nobody is going to sacrifice their life for something that they 100% know is untrue. James died and Peter slept because they believed and wanted everybody else to know that Jesus came into this world. He lived and walked among men. He preached and showed us the way of righteousness. He was arrested, crucified, died, buried, and raised again 3 days later. And the best part, he is coming back for his people. That is the truth that allowed James to die and Peter to sleep. Let's follow their example, walk in their footsteps, and be bold, fearless, confident about the gospel. Let's pray. Father God, we come before you today and we are beholden to you. Every one of our days is numbered and you know the number of our days. You saw them before we took our first breath. You are sovereign over everything that has been made. And we know, Father, that our allegiance, our alliance with you is something that you deserve, but you give us choice. We can serve you, or we can serve created things, which is folly, foolishness. Help us, Father, to cling to the truth of the gospel, to take great courage from testimonies such as Peter and James and Stephen and the others, that we might live boldly, that other people will see our lives and ask all sorts of questions, that they will glorify you on the day that you come back. Give us the strength, give us the wisdom and the conviction to live lives worthy of the gospel. We ask this in the name of your Son. Amen.